your source for all things winning,
for all things racing,
for all things handicapping.
XBTV is your source.
Welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of The Backstretch. Zoe Cabman alongside Jeff Siegel. And Jeff, I believe there was some small little event that went on Saturday that we're supposed to talk about this morning.
I think we have to mention it in passing.
Okay.
The Kentucky Derby. Justify is the latest, you know, string this decade, really, of potential super horses. And I think our sport thrives when we have something that the mainstream media can talk about. I don't know if Justify has quite captured the imagination that American Pharoah did, but he's getting close. And I think those of us who are meshed in the sport can truly appreciate just how good Justify not only has been, but how good he might be. We are really sitting on another very strong possibility for another Triple Crown. And obviously it's not, doesn't seem like it's that big a deal since American Pharoah did it a few years back after going forever without having one.
And that's the thing. A lot of people are thinking it's easier because it's a what have you done for me lately sport, and it's been done by the same connections.
Yeah, well, same trainer for sure. And American Pharoah, as great as he was, if you compare him to Justify, and Justify's win in the Kentucky Derby, spectacular as it was, at this stage of the game, and recognizing that American Pharoah did go out and win the Triple Crown, Justify has only won one leg so far. But if you compare those two horses, there's not that much difference at this stage. And we know how American Pharoah turned out, and I'm not so sure Justify won't as well. But getting back to the actual Derby itself, I was talking to the Mike Smith this morning, as you were. I said to Mike, I said, that race was over three steps out of the gate when you came out of the gate.
And that's exactly what Mike said. I did an interview with him. You can listen to a little bit later on XBTV. He said, once I got three jumps out of the gate, he said, Zoe, honestly, I thought my job was over because I got him to the spot. We knew we had to be forward in place. You couldn't have that many horses in front of you. He goes, I took a bit of a deep breath and just kept rolling right along. He goes, I knew we were going fast, but if we were going that fast, the ones right behind me were going equally as fast.
Well, he did go fast. I think it was like the third or fourth fastest half mile in the history of the Kentucky Derby, and over a very deep, muddy,
the wettest Derby. 2.98 inches of rain fell that afternoon, Siegel.
But if you were Bob Baffert or Mike Smith and you knew you were going that fast, you would have been happy with that trip as opposed to being back where some of the others were when they lost position, thinking about Magnum Moon, who was the other undefeated, hadn't started since didn't start as a two-year-old entrant in the race. They were similar on form. He was back there taking mud and out of the race and completely out of the race. So when Mike Smith and Bob Baffert decided they would rather sacrifice the possibility of getting to a speed duel, at least being in clear where you could be without anybody in front, and that was the strategy, and Justify cooperated by coming out of the gate very, very fast. Mike sent him out of there. He got into that speed duel. But then at least he was in the clear. And you saw those pictures of after the race, Mike was the only one without any mud in his
the
face.
The only one. And he carved out 22-1, 45.77, 111 flat, 137.35, and a final time of 204-1. His final quarter, 26-4. You know who went the fastest final quarter in the whole race?
No, I don't.
The troubled My Boy Jack, who ran very gallantly to be fifth after getting stopped dead turning for home.
Well, the thing about Justify's win, though, that makes, to me, much more impressive even than, in my opinion, in the American Pharoah's Kentucky Derby, and I think Bob agreed, Bob Baffert saying that of all his Derby wins, this was the most impressive. He didn't say he was the best horse yet, but he said this was
He's
the most impressive.
He's very careful with that.
Well, you have to be, you know, for political reasons, because you have different owners. But what made Justify's Kentucky Derby, to me, so impressive was that it was like a tag team wrestling match where he busts out there and he goes head-to-head with a very fast horse, Promises Fulfilled. May not be a mile and a quarter horse, but he's a fast horse and a good horse. Puts him away. And then here comes Bolt D'Oro for the next attack. Shrugs him off at the quarter pole. Then here comes the champion two-year-old from last year, Good Magic. He fires his best shot. He can't get by. And then finally, Audible, who really did finish well, comes, but he's too late. So if this was the toughest derby field in 20 years, and many experts say it was, that to me was a remarkable performance because he took on every major contender and shrugged them off. It was just incredible.
It really was. I mean, it was jaw-dropping. Congratulations to you for getting on him from the beginning. How's that future bet looking?
Yeah, well, it was cash. And that's another thing is I was going to say is it's one thing to pick up the form the night before and right. say, oh, gee, I like Justify. I'm going to pick Justify. But it is gratifying to be able to, and I say this because it's fact, we had him number one on our...
It's been documented.
It's
we
been
can
documented.
Go back, and look at that.
Right. I mean, early March, we had him number one, where all he had done was win a maiden and a non-1 as a 2. And I really believed it. I mean, I had great respect for some of the others in here. I knew it was a tough group. And someone said, what did you see in Justify? And I said before, you just see him and you know him. You just know that's a good horse. Whether or not you're lucky enough to get him to the Derby in one piece, that's out of everybody's hands. But Justify, and now it's to a point where you have to look at him and compare him to American Pharoah. And some of the things that one of the things that Justify has over American Pharoah at this common time, same stage at American Pharoah after his Derby win is, Justify earned a 107 buyer number, which is a higher number than American Pharoah ever earned. That's a buyer number until he won the Haskell,
right?
Where he earned a 109. So at least on pure figures, Justify, undefeated in 4 starts, triple-digit buyer numbers in every start so far, versatile to go to the front or stalk or come from off the pace, and a magnificent-looking horse who works like a really good horse. Everything I just said about Justify, you can say about American Pharoah. So Bob's got, and Justify and Bob Arrow, they have a tough act to follow, but so far, so good.
And one thing I will say about Justify that American Pharoah did not do on Kentucky Derby Day when he won is handle the pre-race activities.
Correct.
Justify was cool, calm, and collected. Bob did utilize those American Pharoah earplugs, mm-hmm. put a pair into Justify, and Mike said, It was just amazing. Mike actually pulled them out after the song My Old Kentucky Home, mm-hmm. pulled them out on the backstretch, stuffed them down his pants, and then he was fine. But yeah. He did put the earplugs in, but he handled everything with aplomb.
Can I ask you a question about Justify, in your opinion? Does he have a weakness? Because we thought maybe he would get nervous. We thought he might not ship. We thought if he ever got behind horses, he wouldn't do it. Wouldn't be able to run. He had problems coming out of the gate in his first couple of starts. Does he have something about him that can be exploited by any other horse or trainer or jockey?
He's got a target on his back, and he had one in the Derby.
Yeah.
And there are going to be some fresh horses running at him early in the Preakness.
Well, let's talk about that.
That would be his only weakness. But Bob's never took a Derby winner to the Preakness and not won the Preakness.
That's true.
So he's got that in his back pocket.
I've got a list of horses here that are more than likely going to run in the Preakness. And one of them on the list is Good Magic, although I still have my doubts as to whether he would run or not. I don't think Chad Brown wants Good Magic to be the sham to Secretariat, if you know what I mean. Because Sham literally broke down chasing him at all 3 starts in the Triple Crown, broke down chasing Secretariat. I don't know whether Good Magic, the Chad wants to make. There's plenty of great racing out there for him to win. I mean, Justify can't be in every race. And if you're going to tackle Justify and beat him, I don't know if today or this time of the year is the time to do that. If Good Magic runs, fine. He'll be a contender. But the rest of these horses, Bravazo, you knew Wayne was going to be in the race. And the horse didn't run badly.
Right.
Okay. Lone Sailor is listed as a possible starter. Quip, who is a stablemate of Justify on the same ownership. I don't know why they would run, but maybe he will. Sporting Chances, another Wayne Lucas, badly overmatched on paper, but it's a Wayne Lucas, so he'll be in the field. Diamond King, who's got a paid up front a subscription to the race because he won the Federico Tessio. I don't know if it's paid up, but he's going to be in the race. But even now, the connection server is saying, I might not go. I got another race I could run in him. And then Tenfold, who was a well-beaten 5th in the Arkansas Derby, a race that really hasn't proven productive. So where is the threat here on Justify?
I don't see it.
The only threat is Justify
really
himself.
Exactly.
And if he were to go out and win the Preakness, as his odds would suggest, he'll be 1-9 no matter what. Then he goes to the Belmont for the Triple Crown, where he has some good horses waiting in the wings. would you run Audible in that race? Again,
Winstar owned.
I understand. Why would you want to run a horse against another your own horse who could win the Triple Crown?
I don't know. I can't find a weakness. He's handled everything with aplomb. I'm going to mention this really quickly and then we'll move on because a lot was made when Bob brought him out the barn for the press, and I got a chance to speak to Bob this morning about that, and you know, it basically blew up Twitter. Everyone was all over it. And simply, Bob said he's had two vets go over him this morning. They went over him. They jogged him the morning of the race in the shed row.
Right.
Absolutely fine. Mm-hmm. He said the stones outside the barn, the gravel was really, really big.
Yeah.
And he was almost thinking, you know, I might not want to take him out there on it. Told Jimmy to put down some mat.
Right.
And he said when he turned him, obviously, we all saw it. He was noticeably off due to the scratches, due to the mud fever. I've talked to several trainers here that said that will make a horse really, really sore, and I've seen it myself. Bob is fantastic to the media. He's not going to bring out a lame horse in front of 150 people. There is no way.
Yeah.
He says the horse is absolutely fine. I will say one thing. He's probably, unfortunately, never going to do that again.
Yeah. Well, I know because of what you say, but and it's fun because he was so good. Bob was with American Pharoah.
He did say he's not the same kind of horse. He's not the same friendly horse as American Pharoah.
Right,
they're
right.
different types of horses. Yeah. But, you know, the show will go on. Mm-hmm. And he said that Justify this morning is A-OK.
That's great to know. Now, let me ask you a question about the run of favorites here. Six straight, 10 out of the last 19. Are we getting smarter or what as the handicapper?
I think the point system, as much as people want to knock it, have certainly helped it because you're missing those purely sprint speed three-year-olds that are going to go in there and go with the heavy hitters.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I will say this, that, and this may contribute. I can tell you it affects my handicapping, but there is so much more information out there now with all the workouts, the gallops being videotaped, the accessibility for the trainers. I remember when I was growing up, I mean, all you knew about horse racing is what you read in the paper, the newspaper. And really, there's no secrets anymore. I mean, you watch these horses breeze in the morning. I mean, you watch them train. You watch all the video replays. You know, again, I mean, before the internet, I mean, you watched the race once and that was the end of it, right?
Do you think it's almost a part if you have one of the favorites as well nowadays? If you have a favorite, it is a very good horse, obviously.
Yeah.
But nobody wants to come from dead last anymore because they realize that trips are so tough in the derbies. They're getting rougher and rougher and rougher each year. It's more often than not run on an off track nowadays that they know they need a forwardly placed horse to navigate a trip because let's face it, unless you're Mind That Bird or Giacomo, like Mike Smith talking to him about Giacomo this morning, he's like, I was just in it to get a piece.
Right.
So I just took back and came running and that's just how it played out because they went so fast up front.
Yeah, I don't know. I just know that I can tell you that when I make a Kentucky Derby selection, even last year, Always Dreaming was a horse that I thought would win.
But you didn't love him like
well,
you
no,
love.
Well, no, but I had confidence in the selection because I'd watched all of his races 15 times. I'd watched him train, all of his workouts. I watched him gallop. I mean, there was so much out there that I could hang my hat on to make a selection that I was confident.
Well, then you're right. It's everything is scrutinized so much. We do have more information. And sometimes in the case of Audible winning the Florida Derby, perhaps it's too much.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, yeah. Although, I know what you're saying about him not working well. But the thing is, I think nowadays with so much, and we've got the speed figures are more sophisticated now. I mean, their pace analysis. Everything has gotten to a point where there are no secrets anymore. And the good news is that it's good for the handicapper because he has all this information to access. But like I say, there is not a lot of secrets anymore. Everybody sees the same thing. And that's why most people fell on Justify as having the confidence to saying, okay, I think he's the best horse. I watched him work. He works great. So he's going to be the favorite. And maybe that's the information that we wouldn't have had 20 years ago. I don't know.
Do you feel he is one of the most impressive Derby winners that you've seen?
Absolutely. There's not
Would
a doubt.
Would you say he's the most impressive that you'd seen? I mean, who is the most impressive Derby winner you've ever seen?
Boy, I actually hadn't thought about that. In terms of that. Seattle Sleuth certainly goes back because he got left at the gate.
Yes.
And he had to weave his way through traffic to make the lead for a horse who, again, like Justify, had never had dirt in his face and never had any kind of adversity or anything like that. And when he overcame that, I said, wow, that's something I didn't know he could do. Now, Justify hasn't had that problem yet, but I'm not sure he's going to have to worry about that anymore, because none of us who have seen Justify believe he's the kind of horse who needs the lead. He's just fast enough to get the lead, which you want to do that. But I don't think you're going to see him sent hard in the Preakness, and he certainly won't be sent hard in the Belmont. I think he's versatile enough to do that. But in terms of impressiveness, and obviously Secretariat, because Sham was a great horse. A great horse, and Sham had a perfect trip in that race. And I remember wanting Sham to win that race. And the way the television screen came up, you didn't see Secretariat to the quarter pole, and you're thinking, "Where's Secretariat?" And all of a sudden, you see this big red horse. As okay, we're dead. So Secretariat certainly was, and Seattle Slow. But you know, you're talking about Triple Crown winners now,
right?
And you have to be that good to win a Triple Crown. And I'm not so sure that Justify, in due time, will take his place at that level.
All right, so we talked about the winner. Let's talk perhaps about the biggest loser in the field. And speaking to Bob Baffert this morning, he was like, man, that Derby. He goes, it's such a tough race. He goes, you can have a really, really good horse and be beaten 40 lengths. And he was, of course, talking about Mendelssohn.
Mendelssohn got wiped out at the start.
Multiple
times. Got behind horses, got the mud kicked in his face, never really seemed to handle the track. And it was a disaster. It was a complete nightmare. So Aidan O'Brien, who took it upon himself to blame himself, even though I really don't think it was all his fault, but he had a story that he wrote, or an interview that he gave, Racing UK, and he listed all of the things he would have done differently, or all of the things that surprised him or he learned. And the thing about Aidan is he's not discouraged. He is going to bring Mendelssohn back and point him for the Breeders' Cup Classic. Also at Churchill Downs.
At Churchill.
But he's going to backtrack, and he's going to say, okay, I'm going to have him ready to run at Churchill, so I got to plan a campaign that will get him up to that race as best possible, and I've got to train him differently because he's got to be alert and sharp. He can't just fall out of the gate, because if you do that in the American racing, you're dead in the water.
I think he called it savagery.
Savagery. The savagery of American racing. It's a great, and I'll quote, American dirt racing is very aggressive at the best of times, but when the weather goes like that, 3 inches of rain, it turns into savagery. And he's right. You can't, you got to go in there and be the bully. And but you have to train them to do that. You have to make sure they come out of the gate. Mike Smith was absolutely committed to go to the front, or at least get into the first flight coming out of the gate. And it worked out beautifully for him. But I don't think Aidan had Mendelssohn mentally ready to do that and be that aggressive. And I think before the race started, it was over for him.
It was a really, really good interview. No sour grapes whatsoever from Aidan O'Brien and Mendelssohn, saying the horse came back absolutely fine. You can find it on ATR. In fact, I've also retweeted it as well.
Right.
Just pure class for him bringing his horse over. Just said he'd never seen anything like it. And he's like, well, geez, they're wearing all these poncho clear plastic ponchos. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah. And he did say that, and I'll quote what Aidan said about Mendelssohn. He was upset. He's only a baby horse, and he was a bit slow to learn a little last year, a little bit whiny. He's grown up, and it was a good experience for him. And I think when he comes over, assuming that he's in good health and good form, we'll see a much, much, much better version, I'm sure, of Mendelssohn in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Let's talk about his post for just a minute, because with Classic Empire last year, the same thing happened. Post position 14, you have that big gap between that and the auxiliary gate.
Right.
Horses leave from the outside, everyone on the outside looking to run in, and there's more room to bump a horse.
Right.
It's a whole different thing, and I know this as a rider. If you get bumped from three paths away, that bump's really, really hard.
Oh,
if
sure.
you get bumped by a horse next to you, they're not going as fast.
Of course.
So post position number 14, while it's outside and you think that's great, there's a gap, maybe the worst post of all.
Well, maybe. I don't know what the statistics say, but I do know that, ironically, in this race, Mendelssohn, who had post position 14, the 15 horse, the horse that was on the outside of that, the first horse in the auxiliary gate, he actually, and that was Instilled Regard, he actually came out fine. And if the culprit here was Magnum Moon, he's the one who made the left-hand turn. If he had gone straight, there wouldn't have been an issue. But there always is an issue. And you pointed out, when a horse can come over two or three slots and then bump you. He's got kind of a running start.
Exactly.
And really, in still regard, who
ran huge.
He ran huge. That was the best race he ever ran in his life. He was fourth in that race. I also thought, and you mentioned my boy Jack, but you know who had an incredibly bad trip and I thought he ran magnificently? Was Hofberg.
Yes.
Oh, did he? He was down on the inside trying to get the Calvin trip, you know, trying to get through on the inside. No hole materialized. And Ortiz was stuck behind horses from the half-mile pole to the quarter pole with nowhere to go. He couldn't make a move. He couldn't get in his momentum. And then he got to the outside, and the horse picked up as much ground as he could. And he galloped out in front of Justify by the 6.5. So he was really flying. And Hofberg strikes me as a colt that will be suited for the 1.5 and the Belmont. And I think Mott's going to train him up to that race. And that horse scares me.
We might have a hell of a Belmont.
I think
usually
we will.
The Belmont is the not-so-great leg of the Triple Crown. This year's Belmont, much like this year's Derby, may be the best Belmont we've ever seen.
Well, you know why? Because in the past, a lot of these horses who ran in the Derby come back in the Preakness, and then they're exhausted and they pass the Belmont. Nowadays, they pass the Preakness and point for the Belmont. But as Todd Pletcher said after Rags to Riches won it, he said, it's okay to run in the Belmont. It's okay, but you better win it. Because if you don't win it, that your horse is going to be on his laying down in the stall for the next month and a half. So that's going to be interesting to see who actually takes him on. Anyway, it's so much fun to have a horse this good and a horse that eventually, if not already, capture the imagination of not only the entire racing world, but fans as well. We expect him to go about his business and win the Preakness, and then we're going to have some fun at Belmont on the second Saturday in June.
All right, let's go to the news. But before we get to the news, we touched on the Derby. Let's touch on the Oaks that was run on the Friday and Monomoy Girl and Midnight Bisou.
That was probably a great race. Yeah,
it was a fantastic race.
Yeah, unfortunately, Midnight Bisou didn't get out cleanly and lost her position.
Break.
And not only did it cost her the race, it might have cost Bill Spahr the filly, because now the word comes out that she's going to stay back east and being trained by Steve Asmussen. And if she had won that race, I doubt whether he would have lost her that way. It's part of the game. It's not a good part of the game. But do you have a reaction to that?
Yeah, I do. And I think this may have been in Jeffrey Bloom's head all along. Now, I don't know if Bill Spahr knew about this, but he's still got horses with Spahr here at Santa Anita. And he's got horses with Steve Asmussen. He has Snapper Sinclair and several others with Steve. And he wants to point this filly to an East Coast campaign. He's looking for the Acorn. He's looking for those three-year-old Grade 1 races that aren't in abundance out here on the West
Coast.
There
aren't any here. So here you got to have a grass filly now.
You either ship or you just leave her with a trainer that you're already comfortable with. So it's nothing that Bill Spahr has done with this filly.
Right.
Bill got that filly as prepped as he could to win that race. She just didn't have the luck on the day.
Right. Monomoy Girl, how good is she? I mean, she was brave.
Really
she
good.
Was
what a fantastic ride by Florent Giroux.
Yeah.
From position 14.
And he had the horse too. I think she's very good. I don't think she's Rachel Alexandra-esque or anything like that, but she's good, and she will continue on. So a good Oaks, a great Derby, and we move on.
A great day of racing indeed. All right, we've got some more racing coming up, not only this weekend at Santa Anita with great racing as well, but we look forward to the Peter Pan, which most considered a prep for the Belmont Stakes.
I don't think it'll be a prep for the Belmont Stakes if Axeman wins it. And I think Axeman will, because Axeman, if you're not familiar with him.
I am.
I know you are, but some of our viewers might not have heard of this horse who is never won a stakes, never placed in a stakes, never really did anything other than win a maiden and an allowance race. But he is very, very good, trained by Bob Baffert. And that's why I say I don't think he'll run Axeman against Justify if it gets to that point. But I think Axeman's going to put on a show on Saturday, going a one-turn mile and eighth. He just won a mile race, not just, but about a month ago, won a mile race here, an allowance race, earned a triple-digit buyer number, which makes him only one of, I think, three or four in the entire crop to do that around two turns. Really, really good horse. I think he'll win Peter Pan, and then he'll probably not run him, I don't think, against his Triple Crown candidate. Now, if Justify were not to run in the Belmont or would somehow manage to get beat, then I think if he wins, he will see him in the Belmont. But Axeman's a really good horse. Enjoy him in New York on Saturday.
Core Beliefs? Splendid Citizen. Good horse, yeah, they were training him. Yep. They just never got into the Kentucky Derby. Of course, he won the race at Turfway Park.
Right, right.
There used to be the Spire.
The stakes race.
Yeah. Yeah, the Jeff Ruby Stakes at Turfway Park.
Right. But anyway, that's a good prep. It's a good race, and we'll watch it very closely because there's still tremendous amount of good three-year-old races in the summer, obviously in the Saratoga, the Haskell, and those kind of races. So we'll see about that. I want to ask, before we go, I got to guess, because I know that you are very close to the barn. What's the deal with Bolt Dora? What's going
to
happen to him?
Oh, I actually got a chance to speak to Shelby this morning. Okay. Mick is still back there with him in Kentucky. They said that he came out of the race fine.
Okay.
Everyone was a little worried about how he went backwards really, really quickly down the lane. And she said he's fine. He's got a few cuts and scrapes. Mm-hmm. Everything's good. They're going to wait for the plane, bring him back here, and just regroup.
Okay.
Mick has already announced that he would like to target the Pacific Classic, so we'll just have to wait and see. But none the worse for wear.
That's good.
For Bolt Dora, which is good. I mean, Victor had him in the spot.
Yeah, I he reminds me so much of Afternoon Delights, who was, I said at the time, the best two-year-old that I'd seen since Seattle Slew back in '94. I think it was when Richard Mandela had, because he'd won the Futurity, Hollywood Futurity, but he never trained on because he couldn't run farther than that. And I know that Mick wants to run, keep this horse going on those longer races, but to me, he would be an absolute dynamite 7/8 mile middle distance type of horse. Let's not forget, he won the Del Mar Futurity. And Afternoon Delights, after Richard found out he couldn't go a mile and a quarter, backed him up, and he actually won the Malibu going 7/8. And I see a lot of Afternoon Delights in Bolt Dora. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you don't ask him to do something that he may not want to do. Time will tell whether I'm proven wrong, but right now I think Bolt Dora, as good a horse as he is, got distance limitations.
Well, Siegel, it's been fun. Last weekend was fun. This weekend, great racing at Santa Anita. We'll have the Angel Flight Stakes.
Yep.
Uppercut will make sure she came back from Keeneland. She ran very well in the Beaumont. She'll go forward in there as one of the likely favorites for trainer Peter Ayrton.
Yep.
But just great racing all round as we continue to look forward to the Preakness. I leave on Monday for the Preakness Stakes along with Richard Migliori.
We are looking forward to all of your on site reports. You'll have all the good stuff, all the good information. You'll be able to watch them train up close and personal. You will have Justify under your watchful eye every minute of every day.
I will be sure to call you every morning at 5 a.m. when I'm getting up to go and watch Justify.
Good. You'll get the answering machine.
It's been fun, Jeff. For Jeff Siegel, I'm Zoe Catlin.